Shalom Aleichem, everyone. It's Binyamin Hammer. We are at, believe it or not, recording number 40 from Eretz Yisrael. Thank you, Rebbe.
A pleasure to join you from the Holy Land. Question number one. With regard to Shabbat's parshios for the next few weeks, when Chutz La'aretz is a parsha behind Israel, is there any need to read the parsha that will be missed by someone traveling from one place to the other in either direction? B. I have heard that some rabbanim are requiring bar mitzvah boys to read the extra parsha for their guests from Chutz La'aretz or Israel. Is this really necessary? Isn't the reading a chovas hatzibur and not a chovas hayachid? I have to tell you this is, for the first time in my life, I had the question this past Shabbos. I was never in Eretz Yisrael at this time of the year in such a circumstance. And although you are correct, the questioner, that according to most of the case, Chovas HaTzibur, but this is a consideration. Number one, and everyone agrees, there are some many Muslims, some of the Quran, who say that the fact that they call that, even if it is a Chovas HaTzibur, it's still, as Rav Yashiv has quoted, rowing, appropriate, if possible, to hear the entire parsha, in last week's case, Parsha's Kedoshim, which had been read here the previous week, and this week they read from Parsha's Emma. So therefore, I did it myself. Thankfully, I have some family members and their friends who volunteered to join a private minyan. There were actually three adults and a couple of children who had not heard Parshas Kedoshim, and I was privileged to be the Balkorei for Parshas Kedoshim straight until the Sheni of Emma. Other Balkorei took over from there. We had seven aliyahs, and it didn't really take much more time. It goes quick, and especially Kedoshim was not so long. Nonetheless, the idea of a bar mitzvah boy having to read a second Parsha, That's ridiculous. We try to make life easier for bar mitzvah boys. At the same time, if it's not just a bar mitzvah boy, in this world of ours, and people are traveling back and forth on a regular basis, I suggested that they make a minyan kavua, if you will. There have to be in a place such as Ramat Beit Shemesh, in any given Shabbos, more than 10 adult males who the previous Shabbats were in America. This has to be. As a matter of fact, after we made our minyan, someone came to us and said, Mincha, why didn't you tell me? In today's world with emails and the like, it's possible to do it in a quiet way. We don't want to make a big rash. We did ours downstairs, away from the crowd. I think it's a good idea for those who wish to do it. Question two. This year, Shabbat Chazon is the ninth of Av. If Ashur has a Kiddush every Shabbat, should, may it be canceled that Shabbat. There's no reason to cancel the Kiddush. Shabbos is Shabbos, especially our minig, which is not the same as some of the old European minhagim. We saw the Gra, but we treat the Shabbos almost as every other Shabbos. At the same time, if for whatever reason they just don't want a Kiddush, we cannot say that they're not allowed to not have a Kiddush. I do not consider it to be Avelus with Harhesia, the lack of a Kiddush. First of all, there could always be reasons why there's never say always. Right? Every Shabbat is not every, could be other exceptions, etc. And number two, even if it's bolate, obvious, why the Kiddush does not take place, does not necessarily mean it's called Avelus with Harhesia. But we have other manifestations. Many shuls, the Chadobi to the Nigan of Elitim. I think almost all shuls see the Haftarah to the Nigan of Echa. This obviously is not done on a regular Shabbos. We don't view this as a Avelus B'Farhesi prohibition. It's just a signal that somehow the Shabbos is a certain tinge of sadness, even though the regular Shabbos behavior should be the norm. Question three. Is there an issue having surgery performed during the 9 days? Can someone schedule an elective surgery, such as plastic surgery or bariatric surgery, during the 9 days? The truth is, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, end of Siman Tov Kuf Nun Aleph, you'll find the issue is not so much the 9 days. The issue is really the entire 3 weeks. it's quoted over there that the in that 3-week period, sit your test, don't be yechidi, certain days, hours of the day, it shouldn't hit Talmidim. And on that, if you look in the, I believe it's in the Dershu, he says that the same thing applies to elective surgery, but then it would have to be postponed even for 3 weeks. There's some danger factor. And others say no, only for the 9 days as far as the surgery is concerned, because there's a positive therapeutic effect. I would say it's a good idea to avoid the surgery in the 9 days, unless there's an important reason to do it then. Maybe it's the only time that the doctor is available, things of this nature. Question four. A congregant opened a bottle of non-delicious wine, drank some of the wine, and put the cork back on the unfinished bottle. To protect the bottle from any shayla, she placed the bottle in her boot in her home closet. Now she finds the boots moved by the non-Jewish cleaning woman as she cleaned up the closet. Can she still drink this wine? I believe that, strictly speaking, she may drink the wine. My guess is probably the cleaning lady didn't even know that the wine was in the boot. In addition, the cork is what's called in the Shulchan Aruch Yoredeh Simon Kuf Chav Dalet Sif Tezayin Muhudak B'Chozka, very tight. And there it says it is not prohibited B'Nidnud, when the bottle is shaked based upon the fact that the non-Jew moves it from place to place. Of course, we're assuming that the non-Jewish person did not remove the cork. There's no need to assume that she did unless it's something which looks like it was tampered with. If it looks like it was tampered with, then you have a problem. You have to throw it out because maybe she even drank from it. Who knows what? But if the cork seems to be in the same spot that the person put it in initially, we can rely on the assumption that it was never tampered with and the movement itself will not answer. There are those who say that our yayin, even if it's not mevushal, may actually be mevushal if you hold like a Moshe, the pasteurization is enough. And there's some additional leniencies of Zman Hazeh. For all these reasons, I believe we can drink the wine. Question five. What would be the criteria for not allowing a congregant to remain a member in a shul? My board has asked me concerning a shul member who refuses to go to Beis Din regarding a monetary dispute. That's a big problem. Refuses maybe a term of art. The word is mesarev. And if a person is a mesarev and the Beis Din, a reputable Beis Din, wrote a siruf that he refuses to come to the shul, then what you do about that siruf is really up to the discretion of the rav. The different language is used in different siruvim. Some call it Siman Shulchan Aruch and Yeredeya, and some have other verbiage to try to give some kind of flavor. But at the end of the day, it's the rav's decision as to what to do. Now, there are many, many, many factors. You can't judge one case from another. The rav could decide that you should apply certain sanctions to him, whether revoking his membership is a sanction. I'm not so sure about that, perhaps. Maybe the other, he won't give any aliyahs. These things are all possibilities. If, by imposing these sanctions, he's likely to go to Beis Din, that's a good idea. If, as a result of the sanctions, he'll leave the shul, perhaps it's also a good idea. The shul has certain principles and standards. But if, given the reality of the situation, the rabbi tells him he's not permitted in shul, no, can't get any aliyahs, you name it. If as a result of that would be a tremendous fight within the shul, because you know how it is, he may have some friends, and they'll sympathize with his position, even if it's halakhically incorrect, and the whole shul can go up in smoke. Shuls can be destroyed over such disputes. Seems to me it's not worthwhile. Again, every case is different. It's an issue with respect to a woman who refuses to go to a Beis Din. You don't seer and shul too often anyway. You don't give aliyah anyway. So then the even if there is a seeruf, it's a bit more difficult to implement any changes. Many more things written about seeruvim, about social interaction, about business interaction. Again, each and every case has to be judged on its own merits. Question number 6. Is there a reason not to enforce a couple to sign a prenup as a precondition to being beside a kiddush? It depends on your attitude. Some rabbis take a heavy hand and will not do a wedding without a prenup. Others say it's difficult for a rabbi to force such an issue on a chasman kala. Sometimes there's one parent who refuses to allow it. You're putting tremendous pressure on a chasman kala as they're getting married. Not necessarily so appropriate. Powers of persuasion should be used. Try to convince the individual to sign the prenup. Yes, there are those who will not be mitzvah kedushin without it. Again, if as a result they'll sign it, that's a good result. But if with this walk and go to another rabbi who may not be so capable, then already it's may not be such a good idea. You have no prenup and no good rabbi doing the tzaddik kedushin. It requires a careful shikul hadas. And you don't make fights between the chasan and the kala, the mechatanim. You have to be careful before you make such an absolute rule. Question number 7. Is there any issue with inviting a woman scholar in residence to speak to men and women? This is completely dependent upon the minhag hamakom. In some places, it's ma'as and b'chol yom. Happens all the time that a woman comes to speak at a shul event, and the men come, and the women come, and in poter per metafsid, no one says anything. Okay, that's the custom, and that's the custom. Other places, they say, chas v'shalom, what are you, crazy? A woman should speak in the presence of men? Never. And there are those who are in between, and they depend upon the context. Maybe, you know, to speak from the bima in shul is inappropriate. That's one level. Maybe it's inappropriate bichlal, but if it's a girls' institution, which is a graduation in a girls' school, I've been in touch that only a man speaks. A little bit funny. But in other places, the woman, usually the principal, speaks even though the men are in the audience, because it's a note of the graduation of a girls' school. Again, you have to know the scene, know the people. It's largely custom-based. Question 8 is the hardest of all the questions. I have a problem in shul with excessive talking during davening. I have tried the nice guy approach, standing up with a smile and pausing the bal tefillah. I have discussed it in my drushes and I've spoken to congregants in a friendly manner during the kiddush. And I've even brought it up to the women when I speak with them. One of the reasons... which the particularly difficult part. So right, cool from down to that. Yes, in a full industry.
Rebbe, the Rabbanim do not hear you. You're coming in and out. I'm not sure if it's the phone, but the last question after the question, no one is hearing the response.
Question 7 was not clear?
No, question 7 was clear. Question 8, the nice guy approach with the excessive talking.
Okay. I'm beginning question 8. Okay. I'm beginning the answer to question I'm beginning the answer to question 8 all over again. It's such a difficult question of how to have decorum in our shuls. First, one should teach the strict halacha. During Chazar Sashatz, Kuf Chav Dalet Siv Zayin, Le'atziach, Sichas Chulin, B'Shem, Tzim, Rechot, V'Atzim, Yimsachu Chote, the sinner. The Goyim, he's called. Now this is chapter and verse in the Shulchan Aruch. So some people are not moved by the Shulchan Aruch. It doesn't really mean it. It couldn't possibly mean it. Also doesn't really mean also. Well, you find a similar idea in Kriyas HaTorah. So the Kuf Mem Vav Siv Beis is also the Sape. One may not speak during Kriyas HaTorah. So, being just a nice guy and trying to talk to them nicely, of course, is a good thing. Private conversations are good things. But if you want to be a little bit, you know, scary, it sometimes works. The Mishnah Berurah says over here, Kuf Chav Dalet and Cotton, Chav Zayin, Oy la Noshim Shemesichem V'Eitz HaTfila, talk to Adam in the cloud. Ki ra'inu kama beis ha'knesses necheru b'shulam on zeh. Many shuls have been destroyed as a result. They'll say, how can the shuls be destroyed in America? And the answer is the neighborhood changes. When all those neighborhood changes, when all the shuls, so much time and money and effort went into it, become, unfortunately, either unused or used by others. And if you want to turn the knife, you explain, and when that happens, the Balabatim's real estate prices go down. To preserve their own property violation, stop talking in shul. This is what it says. Of course, the rabbi speaks, they won't listen. It says in Mishnah Berurah, clearly, you have to appoint known people to see to it that they don't talk. Known people that are approved by the Rav, so that no one should say to this guy who tries to stop him, me some cholish sarav shofar len. Who authorized you? The Rav authorizes. The Rav has to be on top of this. A very serious responsibility. Every rabbi has to pick his own strategies. You use multiple strategies in order to try to achieve this result. And the second part, the loss of the youth. No shul wants to lose its youth. Either for a negative reason, they want to hang out, or for what we call it a positive reason. Either way, the keel is weakened. Some rabbis have written letters. If I'm not mistaken, memory serves, Rabbi Przanski of Teaneck sent his whole membership a letter he received from Rabbi Dr. A.J. Twersky saying he can't dial in there anymore. It's too much talking. Apparently that letter had a big impact, because it was written by a great rabbi and sent out by Mora D'Asra. Something like this can sometimes work. Every case, of course, is different. I'm told that in some shuls in Woodmere, they made people sign a particular contract that they're not going to talk as a precondition for membership. And once again, if that strategy works, it works. You have to use many different strategies in concert. Someone walking around the shul saying, hey, you signed the contract. Who knows? Whatever works. The real tragedy is, as the questioner mentioned, they didn't learn how to daven from their parents, would rather hang out. That's the tragedy. Why didn't they learn how to daven from their parents? One of two things. Their parents didn't learn how to daven. The parents talked during davening. The ma yas ben velo yechta. How do you expect the child to be better than his parents? Or if the parent really knows how to daven, the lack of it in his parenting skills, not able to convey the importance of this enterprise, the daven of the kavana, to his children. That's also a serious problem. That's really a private problem. It's not the rabbi's problem. It's about the boss's problem. But again, at the end of the day, it comes down to the Rav's decision as how to try to handle this situation. Some people don't understand the davening. Some make a daven in English in certain circumstances. A big problem. It's no wonder that a more motivated youth is drawn away from the shul towards a place where there's less talking, because they're following their mentors who are doing the right thing and not talking during davening, and the parents are doing the wrong thing. So if a person wants his son to sit next to him, the parent should know to be completely quiet during davening, which should make the father a greater role model and enable them to sit together. That's the way to do it. But it really has to be worked on a constant basis. Number 9. A doctor in shul did a residency together with a non-Jewish doctor who is now getting married. The ceremony will be in a church and the reception is in a catering hall. The Jewish doctor has been invited as a bridesmaid. What isn't she allowed to do? What does the Rebbe recommend? She's not allowed to be a bridesmaid in a church. You pass on the halacha, you're not supposed to even walk into a church under any circumstances. Almost any. I would recommend to her, there's going to be a reception in the catering hall. She should appear at that reception. She shouldn't stay that long and shouldn't eat anything. Not supposed to be eating from a wedding of a non-Jew to a non-Jew. Quote the seventh even a shalom of Daraisa. Quote of the Ordea, there's a shachas momekel. But it's much better if she doesn't eat anything aside, but who knows when it's kosher. But even if it would be, she's better off eating nothing. And again, going only to the reception in the catering hall and not to the church. 10. When there is a second marriage for both the bride and groom, divorced or widowed, A, is there about Dekan and a veil? Good question. Mishnah tells us in the Sechta Ksubas, the beginning of the second parak, that if a woman appears in a veil and her hair sticks out, that is a sign that she is a basula, the first marriage, not relevant to how much ksuba can be collected. The impression is conveyed that this is not necessary to do so when it comes to a second wedding. Nonetheless, I feel there's no requirement to stop it. No one's going to collect a ksuba based on it nowadays. So I think if they want to do it, they can do it. B, the Sherev Rav is only at the chuppah and Suda Rishona, parentheses Bo Bayom, or longer. It's only both. If it's both Suda Rishona and Bo Bayom. If it's the second meal that day, you would not say Sherev Rav. If it's the first meal that goes into the next day, which is very common, starts before Shkia, goes after Shkia, once again, you would not recite the Sherev Rav. C, is there any reason why the children cannot attend the ceremony? Once again, it depends upon the custom. In certain parts of Europe, a child would never be allowed to come to a parent's remarriage. It's considered disrespect to a deceased parent. In other communities, it's done all the time. Again, going back to my personal experience, I remember when my cousin had lost her father and her mother remarried, she told me, her husband's going to the wedding. I'm going out. I'm not going to be anywhere near this wedding. I thought that was a universally accepted custom. I heard it as a youngster. The answer is, in parts of Europe, I think she came from Hungarian, I had the same shadow when my father remarried, and he asked me if I'd come to the wedding, and I called up the late Rabbi Yisrael Wagner, who came from the same area of Galicia where I came, my father came. Come to the country. Especially if your mother wants you to come, you should certainly come. There's no real custom, at least in this part of the world, to the contrary. So therefore, in such circumstances, it would be permissible, maybe even required to go. That's the father's request. Okay. Other than the ksuba, what other changes should one be aware of? Well, second marriage of both, perhaps you're a little bit more subdued. They may have some other details, but let's go to the next question. 11. Is there any problem of wearing earrings, a necklace, a bracelet, and a ring? Is a person supposed to remove one because of Zeicher L'Churban? Well, as discussed in the Shulchan Aruch quite explicitly, but the bottom line for us is not so clear. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman, Tav Kuf Samach. He writes in Sif Beis, we are taught that if you set a table, you leave something missing. You don't set it completely. You don't put all the fancy dishes on. You leave a little bit out. People do that, I don't know. You leave a place empty without a dish, I don't know. And then if a woman puts on her jewelry, She should leave one out. Should leave one out. Seems to me that there's a source for this custom that's being described over here. To leave one out. Mr. Brewer writes, if she has many different types of jewelry, she should put them on at the same time. Then he goes to an aside that you put on fancy jewelry and it causes all kinds of jealousy. The goyim who are jealous of us, but that's not the original question over here. I believe, once again, that the rule, the person should not put on all the jewelry, types of jewelry at the same time. Although, again, if you look in the dirush, you get an impression that this is a custom which is not always observed. Nowadays, there is a brisa that's quoted, but perhaps there are other interpretations or other practices. Question number 12. Can Abdullah be listened to over the phone? Is it better over Skype? In my view, could the strict halacha, you're not yotzi over the phone. It's not really your voice. Skype is no better. But on the other hand, it is absolutely impossible otherwise. It's either this or nothing. Can't hurt. There are some people who feel if it's live, you can be yotze. Perhaps. But certainly the chatchila, it's hard to learn even with the Evid, but certainly the chatchila, we should see here Havdalah direct, not through any phones. Okay. 13. If a veil is b'far hesya and Shabbos is not to be done, how do we explain the minig to welcome a mourner after the chadodi by saying amokim minachem? That's a good question. It's an excellent question. So you have to look at the Shulchan Aruch and see whether, in point of fact, welcoming a mourner by saying amokim minachem is a problem. There's an assumption being made over here. Well, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim, in Simon Reish A Zayin, Yecholim L'Nachem Avelim B'Shabbos. How do you like that? You go to his house, say, Amokim Menachem. Well, Mr. Gura, it's Bekoshi Yitiru, and you should, everyone should pick a time to go over on Shabbos. It's not a good idea. Not a good idea. But this custom of welcoming people in the Kameh after Kabbalah Shabbos can be construed to be a fulfillment of Nicham Avela B'Shabbos, which according to this first line, may be done. Of course, the second line, Lo Yomalo Kiderav Shomalo Bechol, what we call Habakom, and Lo Yomalo Shabbosi Milizok, or Milunachem, Urufua Karova Lava, excuse me, Nechava Karova Lava. It comes to the Chol, that's the first, and it comes to the Ovel, the last. This is what it says. However, we know that not everybody fulfills it. People are giving the regular greeting even though the sun has gone down. The olden days, they were the Kabbalah Shabbos before Shkia, and before that, they would have fulfilled this mitzvah of Nicham Avel, not Shabbos yet. If the Avel come in Marshall, that's its early Shabbos, even then, it's just after the Chododi, it's a potential problem, Boy Kala. The preferred text to say is Shabbos He, the Menachem, and the Chama Karova Lava. That's the proper thing to say in that circumstance. Okay. Question number 14. I've seen women mourners come to funerals wearing a shell and a vest. On which garment should they tear clear? Should women be instructed to wear a blouse? So there's no suffix. Perhaps. I believe there's no suffix here either. From where I come from, the shell should be compared to an undergarment, which you do not rip. She should rip the vest. She doesn't want to rip the vest, let her wear a regular shirt and rip the regular shirt. This is what should be done. What should be done. Last question. My 8-year-old son has informed his parents that he is a big boy and no longer wants to attend shul youth groups. He wants to daven next to me. He's the rabbi on Shabbos. I sit on the amud with the shul president. Some congregants may respect having my son next to me. Others may feel it's inappropriate. Is this a decision that I make and just inform the board? or do I let this become a board discussion and decision? Neither. Nothing to do with the board. This is the Rav's personal decision, how he trains his own children. Balabatim should not be able to tell the Rav how to train his own children. He shouldn't have to ask the board. He shouldn't have to worry about the board voting on such a thing. He just does it if he thinks it's the best thing for him. Not a subject of discussion. Certainly not for a decision of a board. It's not appropriate. It's something which is a matter of how a father with the Rav raises his son. It's complicated. I think the son should sit next to the father. Where I, all my years of Rabbanus, my son sat right next to me. And it wasn't such a big elevated bima. There were others sitting on that higher part of the shul. I know that's what's important for my children to sit next to me. I give everybody a bracha, every Rav, who was also with Tzorchei Tzivus Emunah. So as the people say, busy with the shul, he loses track of his own family. That would be a terrible thing. Every Rav is his primary responsibility for family first. I wish you all best greetings from the Holy Land. You should be zoche to return all of us to the Holy Land. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Rabbi, very much. We hope we can call upon you again in the near future. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
What?
Fun?
Yeah, it's fun.
Oh, wow, I was there.
Wait, I'm just kidding, like 5 minutes. I sat here already. I'm hanging up pretty late.